Everybody to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 274. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me today are James Jones.
Yep.
And Greg Leahy.
Oi, oi.
What a pathetic whimper that was. John is not here, but he will be here in a few minutes. He's droning a little bit late, so.
See, James just can't muster the enthusiasm without John.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay, well, folks, we got a really fun episode coming up for you today. We're going to start out with new business, and in the second segment, we've got our annual predictions feature. We're going to look back at the predictions we made last January, see how those panned out, and then make some new predictions for 2012. It should be a lot of fun. And just in case you don't make it all the way through this episode in time, I want to remind you that the cutoff for retroactive votes will be Thursday, January 12th. So if you want to vote in retroactive, and you do, you better go do that. I'm saying this for the people who take 2 or 3 days to get through our show. Okay. All right, first up, new business, and before we start going around the room, I wanted to ask if any of us have made any gaming resolutions for 2012. It was just past the new year, and you know, you hear other people talking about...
What the hell does that even mean?
Well, some people say, I'm going to finish that one game that I've been meaning to finish for a long time, stuff like that.
Not applicable.
Not, okay. Well, yeah. Fair enough. Greg, what about you?
I'm just going to keep soldiering on the way I've been doing for these past, you know, too many years.
Well, I would say John can't speak for himself just yet, but I would say it sounds like he's already been doing a pretty good job of actually finishing some of the games that he's been playing lately. And
allegedly.
Well, I take him at his word. But for me, I did make a resolution this year, and I think it might interest some of our listeners, might interest you guys. I've been on such a tear. You know, I used to rent games, and I used to, you know, look for deals and stuff like that, and just kind of be picky about what I played because I was a student and I didn't have a lot of free cash. Since I started a job and I have more money to my name, especially at my fingertips that is mine, that I can really kind of spend on whatever I want to, even if I shouldn't, I've been buying games a lot more than I used to. And it's not even so much that I'm buying games I'm not playing, although there's some of that, you know, which I'm always trying to deal with, but it's mainly just I'm buying games really fast, like just too many, you know. So when I go a week and I buy 5 games, I start to worry about my social life and, you know, the quality of my existence. And so my gaming resolution is just to slow that down. I decided that I am going to refrain from buying any games between January 1st and whenever Mass Effect 3 comes out, which is in March. And a couple stipulations on this. Number one, to be fair, I bought a lot of games right before New Year's Day, so there were a lot of sales. So maybe I set myself up for great success in this resolution, but that's okay. The other thing is, if Mass Effect gets delayed, then I will end this on the day in which it was supposed to come out. So if it gets delayed to October or November, I'm not going to move along with it. The only exception to this, the only game that I will buy if it comes out during this period is Demon's Crest for Virtual Console. I think I'm pretty safe on that one, but if that comes out, I will buy and play that game on the day that it comes out.
Are you listening, Nintendo, Capcom? If you want any of his money for the next quarter before the end of the fiscal
That's
year,
right.
You're going to have to do it. You're going to have to get Demon's Crest out there.
That's right.
But on the subject of Capcom, you're passing on Revelations then for a couple of months?
I'm not passing on it. I'm just going to wait.
For a couple of months, yeah.
Yeah, which actually fits my plan a little bit anyway, because I'm, given the price and the crappiness of Mercenaries, or I can't say crappiness, I haven't played it, but the unappealing nature of Mercenaries last year, I am a little bit in wait-and-see mode on that anyway. I wanted to hear what other people had to say about it, so I'm fine. I can wait a month on it. I don't care. Quite frankly, I just have a lot of other stuff. I mean, I went in to finish Xenoblade. I bought L.A. Noire and Civ 5 and Witcher 1 and 2. have tons of stuff on my new gaming PC to play. So I'm not short of stuff. Don't worry, my new business is not going to get boring anytime soon. This is more of a personal thing.
What do you think?
I'm curious if anyone else did this. People do this kind of stuff around New Year's Eve, and so I put it out there to the listeners. If you have a gaming resolution for the new year, let us know, and may follow up with us later and let us know if you kept it. I am going to keep mine because, quite frankly, I've set myself up for success. But so anyway, for my new business this week, first off, I got Nano Assault for 3DS. This is the newest shoot 'em up game from Shinen Multimedia, the German developer who brought you Iridium and Nanostray and Fast on WiiWare, and also Jet Rocket and Maya the Bee and a bunch of other stuff going back to the GBA days. They're a really interesting developer. They're extremely proficient technically. Their game designs are sometimes a bit flawed, but usually very interesting. Even within a constrained genre like shoot 'em ups, they often have kind of interesting little features that other people have not done before. So I always think their games are really interesting, and they've been published by Majesco for a long, long time. And sometimes the distribution isn't great or
existent.
It's been a while since I bought a Shinen game. I think the last one I bought was Nanostray for DS, which was years ago. And I thought it was really cool and it looked great at the time, but ultimately the gameplay just didn't hold up for me, you know, and I think I ended up trading it in or something. In this case with Nano Assault, I'm going to be keeping this game. I'm very, very impressed with it because not only is it the best looking 3DS game, full stop, it is absolutely fantastic, and really it looks just as good as it did back at E3 when I first played it, and my opinion of it is the same as it was at E3, which is, wow, this is really fun, and holy crap, it looks incredible. And I think, you know, the screenshots are very impressive if you look at them, but when you see this game on your actual 3DS screen, you realize it is being rendered in real time, and it really is that. It really does look that good. And also, when you see it on the 3D screen, I think the 3D effect is nicely done. It's subtle, but it works like the best 3D games. It works with the gameplay in the sense that this is a 3D shoot 'em up, and so the 3D graphics really sort of set that up nicely in the presentation. They work really well with it. And when I say 3D shoot 'em up, it's not really a pre-existing genre. I think that's one of the things I like the most about this game, is that it's very innovative in the fact that it is a shoot 'em up. I mean, it's you control this one ship and you're blasting a lot of things, and it's fairly simple in setup, but what they've done is they've kind of wrapped that gameplay around 3D objects. So much of the game involves navigating these cellular structures, because you play this kind of inner space thing, you know, where you're controlling a ship that's inside of someone's body. I'm not really clear on what the story is, but you're this microscopic ship and you're blasting these sort of biological alien looking things. And so you're sort of racing around on these three-dimensional cellular structures that are very much like the planetoids in Mario Galaxy. I'd say the geometry of these is a little more complex. There's no like spheres. They're more like, you know, crazy donut shapes and weird oblong things with protrusions. And because of that, it's interesting because your ship hugs those surfaces, and so it travels smoothly around them, but it's always moving in different directions and the camera's sort of keeping up with it. And quite often you're shooting over an edge, so you can't really see what's on the other side of it until you breach that edge, until you follow that curvature around it. And sometimes there's an enemy right around it, so it makes you feel really cautious as you move around this surface. And it really affects the way that you play the game, even though the way it plays, the mechanics of it are very traditional in a shoot 'em up sense. So those levels are interesting. They put these DNA structures around this planetoid sort of thing, and so you have to go seek those out while also defeating the enemies that pop up around on the various surfaces. And even just being thorough and looking for these things is really fun, because the planet is, you know, even though most of them aren't very big, because the shapes are so complex and you can't see the whole thing at one time because it's very three-dimensional, you really kind of have to map your way around it and really explore thoroughly in order to find all the different locations where they might have put these DNA things. It's really fun stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, John Lindemann is here.
Yeah.
You may now end your podcast listening experience.
Are you kidding? It just got improved tenfold.
Okay, so the other part of Nano Assault is some of the stages are sort of from behind the ship. They look a lot like Star Fox. And, you know, it, just like in Star Fox 3D, you get the really nice sense of depth because you're shooting into the screen and the enemies are coming out towards you. And I don't know that the 3D effect helps you tell where things are, but it certainly looks really nice and it works really well with the way that they've set up these gameplay sections. And Neil, in his review, sort of complained that you can't roll like you do in Star Fox. I think that's maybe a good decision in Nano Assault, because the rolling in Star Fox really, to some extent, makes things easy because it deflects shots. It also is kind of a cover-up for the fact that your R-Wing moves really slowly in Star Fox 64, and it's kind of slow to turn, and so it's a way to really quickly shift direction. And in Nano Assault, your ship moves around the screen very quickly, so you don't really need that ability, and I think being able to deflect the enemy shots would almost make these sequences too easy. They're not very difficult to begin with, but they're really fun. The enemies are just, the art design is excellent. They're very cool enemy designs, and then the boss stages are really, really spectacular, because they take place on these sort of rings, so you're going left and right along this ring. There's some bosses in Klonoa that are like this, where the boss is sort of in the center of the ring and you're going around it. I think there's some stuff in Galaxy too like that.
I think so, yeah. The giant robot is like that.
Yeah. So they're like that, and so you're shooting into the screen towards the boss in order to do damage on them, and oftentimes they're kind of rotating and spinning around. But then they also have appendages and things like that that are coming out to your plane, so you also have to shoot laterally to either side to clear those out before they hit you. So they do some really clever things with this, and the bosses just look amazing. I think Nano Assault is a really, really cool game. I think it's probably the best Shining game that I've ever played. It looks absolutely fantastic, and it's $20. For some reason, the suggested retail price on this game is $20. I think it's a steal.
Soft market, I would assume.
I don't understand it, because, you know, Majesco's probably not going to do a wide distribution on this game. You know, GameStop is going to get like one copy per store, etc. And so, to me, it seems like the people who know about this game and are interested in it are probably going to seek it out anyway, and they probably would pay full price. I don't know. But regardless, it's the kind of game where at $40, I might have kind of waited to play someone else's copy to try it for myself before I went out and try to find a copy. At $20... give it to me right now. Feed it, you know. So it does certainly make the purchase a lot easier to justify, and maybe that's what their thinking was. But I think it's one of the cheapest 3DS games, also one of the best.
They go back to the first level type, mm-hmm. describing, you know, sort of this three-dimensional shooter gameplay, you know, and you're kind of moving in a bunch of different directions, shooting in different directions. How does it handle that with the controls? Because usually you haven't got two sticks.
Sure. So the way you do it is you use the face buttons to fire in cardinal directions, and you can push two at a time to shoot diagonally, but you don't really need to do that. Most of the time you can do it, or you could just reposition yourself to shoot in a cardinal direction. So, and also your shots spread out in a triangular fashion as they get away from your ship, so you don't have to be super exact with it. You know, you don't have to line up perfectly with this thing. And so it is essentially a twin stick shooter with only one stick, but I think it handles this with the face buttons. It handles it much better than I've seen in other games. And it sounds like it would be kind of clunky feeling and not all that great. And, you know, like people would be bitching that, man, they should have waited till the Circle Pad Pro was out, et cetera, et cetera. I think they've been very clever about the way they've implemented it, and actually feels fine. Surprisingly, it feels really fine. And then when you take it to the boss battles that I mentioned, where you're moving around in this ring, it actually works really well, because you press X, the top button, to shoot up into the screen towards the boss, and then you push either Y or A to shoot to the sides for the things that get in your way as you move around the ring. So it not only does it work well, but it also translates as they move the camera around and handle the gameplay from different perspectives. It's very, very well done. So the next game that I've got this week is Bastion, which I had started last week, but I didn't really have enough to say about it yet. I got this on Steam, but it debuted on Xbox 360, and you can get it for there. It's been on a lot of sales recently, and if you got this game on a sale like I did, congratulations, because this game is easily worth the full price of $15, and if you paid less than that, then you got a fantastic bargain. I think Bastion is one of the best games released last year. Now that I've played it, I can attest to that. And James, you played at least a bit of it on Xbox, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it, but I wasn't quite as in love with it as everybody else seems to be.
Did you play all the way through it?
I played through the demo and the first few stages.
Okay, so interesting point here. I played the demo when it first came out on Xbox and thought, well, this is neat, but I can wait for a sale or something, because it didn't really grab me the way I kind of expected it to based on all the crazy positive reviews it was getting. And then when I bought it on sale and I started playing it with my new, you know, 360 controller for PC and everything, I felt the same way. For the first hour or so, I was like, it does some neat things, but it doesn't really feel all that special. It's not really that much fun. As it turns out, it just kind of takes a while to ramp up, because as you get more weapons and you go to and you see different enemies in the later levels, and also as the story fleshes out over time and you learn more about this world and the characters that inhabit it, I think Bastion does an amazing job of really sucking you in. And I guess the amount of time that it takes for you to really realize how great it is will be different for each person, but I think by the time you get to the end of this game, pretty much everyone will love it, because it is so well done. It is so artful. It's so creative. And the world that it creates around you, from really the thinnest elements, I mean, just like really basic graphics and gameplay, is intriguing and endearing. And the characters are really interesting, even though they barely say anything other than the narrator. It's very well done. And also, I think the gameplay, which is this sort of isometric thing, the gameplay reminds me a bit of Secret of Mana without so much of the RPG stuff. You know, there is experience, but it's really a minor element of the game. You don't see numbers popping up all over the place quite so much. It feels more actiony than Secret of Mana, but I think you can sort of trace it back to that maybe. And the funny thing is, as you get introduced to more and more of the weapons, and I think there may be like 11 or 12 weapons in the game, what you find is that they all operate very differently. None of them are interchangeable at all. And they're all balanced so that really any of them, or any combination of them, is a legitimate way to play the game. And that's exciting when you get a new weapon, because you really feel like, well, this is not strictly better than the stuff I already had. It just gives me a different way to accomplish my goals. So you can test it out and then decide, do I take this or leave it? It's just wonderfully, wonderfully done. And the whole game is like 5 or 6 hours long. It's a really tight experience. It doesn't outstay its welcome. But when you finish it, you'll almost wish there was even a little bit more to it. And then it gives you this new game plus thing, so you can actually go through it again. It is a really wonderful game. And I was a little bit of a doubter. And by the end of it, I was completely enchanted. So I would say, go play Bastion one way or another. I think it's now currently supported in Google Chrome as a browser game. That is so bizarre. I can't even imagine how they did that, or I guess you still have to pay for it. I don't know.
Yeah, there is a shop, yes.
Well, it's wonderful. It is really wonderful, and I think you should play it. Finally, I've got Gears of War 3. I haven't quite finished it. The campaign has turned out to be longer than I expected. I keep feeling like I must be getting close to the end, and it goes on a little further, but it's not a bad thing, because I think Gears 3, the campaign, is definitely the best of the series, and I like the first two games, but this is the first one that I bought, and I'm glad that I bought it. I think there's a lot to it. I haven't even touched the multiplayer, and I heard that's great. But Gears 3 is, you know, mechanically, it is very much like the first two games. There may not be a single new weapon in this game. Maybe one. And that's really my main criticism of it, is that, you know, the weapons are so cool in Gears that I really wish they had made some more new ones for this and let me play around with something totally fresh. But as it is, there are a lot of weapons, and you really have a lot of access to them. A lot of times you can really just choose what kind of weapons you want, because they're just, the battlefield is littered with them. Once you kill a bunch of guys, you can just kind of go around and cherry pick whatever you want and pick out your favorite combination. But they're all really fun to use. And where Gears 3 really excels is the enemy variety. Because all the enemies, they really behave differently, they have different abilities, and you have to tackle them in completely different ways. And this game has by far the most kinds of enemies of the series, much, much, much more than the first two games. And dealing with them and experiencing them for the first time, and then they start to mix them together, and then things get really crazy and hard to wrap your mind around. I think that is what makes this game, really sets it apart and makes it by far the best of the trilogy. And the story, they has matured so much in this game. I mean, it is still bro-y in the sense that, you know, these big football player-looking guys carrying their giant guns.
Or football player-looking women.
Yeah, there are women in this game. The women in the armor looks more believable than I would have expected.
Well, believable for a fully adult human male on steroids.
Yeah. The character design looks, to me, I don't know, maybe they've made some subtle tweaks to it, but to me, the characters look a little more human and realistic than they did in the first game. But they certainly behave in a more human way in this game, by far. The writing is just far superior to the previous games. The moments that they want to be emotional and touching are actually emotional and touching, whereas in this Gears of War 2, they were just kind of laughably... they're trying way too hard. And in this game, it feels like they actually pulled it off. And the world they've created finally feels fleshed out. There's a great variety of environments. You traverse long distances where you encounter just amazingly different locales and totally different kinds of gameplay along the way. And this really feels like a fully fleshed out adventure game in which the combat is you shooting. And I'm very impressed with it. I'm very pleased with it. I think it's been really fun. And the pacing is fantastic, especially considering how long it is. I'm surprised that the pacing is this good. So Gears 3 is a game that I'm going to be spending more time with. I want to get into some Horde mode. I know Striker Obi, Mike Sklens, has been playing it, and he's been wanting me to get into it with him, but I wanted to finish the campaign before I get into the multiplayer. But I think I will, because it is really fun to play. And it's a series that I've enjoyed from the first game, but this is the first one where I feel like it's really come together, and I think they've made a really classy, excellent game that's really the full package. And that's all my new business, so turn it over to James.
Yeah, so I spoke about trying to play Deus Ex and being foiled utterly. I went ahead and I looked into it. I did a bunch of experiments. So I posted on the Deus Ex support forum basically this whole lockup situation and got no replies, predictably enough. But there's a lot of different people who report lockups in this game, so to me it seemed perfectly logical that this is related to some kind of terrible bug, and I thought, well, the firmware of the Xbox just got updated. Maybe they're running into each other. Wasn't the case. So you might recall, my Black Friday haul was the Best Buy deal where I bought Deus Ex and L.A. Noire for essentially the price of one of those games. And L.A. Noire never showed up. It was back-ordered, so it was going to get here after Deus Ex, but Christmas rolls around and it wasn't there, so I looked up my shipping, and it had shipped in December 1st. So
that's not a good sign.
I called Best Buy and they were very, very helpful. Well, that's not right. That should have already gotten there. So I get it. I'm like, well, since Deus Ex is being a bastard, I'll just wait on that. I put L.A. Noire in there. I start playing. I get in the car. I drive a little distance. Discrete error. Shit.
Da-da-da.
So I thought, well, those two are oddly related to each other. And I went back and thought, when's the last time I played an Xbox disc-based game? It's been a while. So I dug out Armored Core 4 Answer.
Halo 3, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, that was you, John. Because I figured AC for Answer, I hate this game enough as it is. I might as well let it generate more hate. I put it in there. Fine. Everything's great. Turns out, here's what it is. So I followed the Microsoft instructions for a disk read error. They're really dumb. You know, they're basically like, start with, is it plugged in? Well, I got a disk read error, so yeah. There's all these instructions. I followed this weird YouTube video that talked about sometimes the arm can get off, so you use a piece of paper to push it back in place. That didn't work. As I get to like the 37th checklist on Microsoft's list of things to try, and it says, take the hard drive off. And I'm like, what? No. So I skip it, go to the next one. Doesn't work. I finally go back. All right, I'll take the hard drive off. Deus Ex goes right through the loading screen, right to the start. Can't save anything, but it goes right through. So I figured out what it is. There is a problem with my hard drive, or well, there was, and old games were fine, but when it tried to create new save games for new games, it all went to Shitsville. So today I went and I procured a 120 gig Microsoft hard drive. Which, first off, they're really expensive. And
yeah,
secondly,
they're a rip-off.
They stopped making them. Microsoft decided, you know, maybe at most a quarter of our user base is using the S. Let's only make hard drives for that one.
Did you consider just using a USB thumb drive?
I did, but I read some places that it's not quite as cohesive an experience, if that makes sense. Hmm. So I went ahead and I went, what you have to do if they're not going to make them? I went and bought a used one. Just a little menacing.
Used hard drive.
I got a practically brand new looking one from a black 360 console.
Oh, yeah.
120 gig for $40. And the transfer cable, which is $20 for a cable.
Yeah, the cable is the greatest. You have to pay for it, and you will use it once.
Exactly. One time. Done.
James, I think I have one sitting around somewhere from when I upgraded to a black 360. I wish you'd asked.
Yeah, I have one as well. I have one.
It's one of those things where a lot of people have it, and they're obviously not using it in perpetuity.
No. If you went and bought it online right now, they're like 8 cents because the market's just flooded with them. I just couldn't wait for, 4 days for it to ship. It's like I want to play these two fucking games. Because my Xbox is literally useless unless I want to play games I've already beaten.
Yeah, I love those things because
fuck
it's like
you.
They are utterly useless except for the one time when you need them, at which point they become the most valuable thing on the planet right. For that like half hour of time.
For the 22 minutes it took to transfer my files, it was the most valuable thing I owned.
Yep.
And then it became the most worthless thing I owned. Oh my God, it was awful. So I was able to boot up, I was able to start Deus Ex, and it looks pretty, and I got through the opening sequence, and then we started recording. So what I'm going to talk about instead, because I do actually have to talk about playing something besides a second edition of my Xbox is killing me, I wanted to give a little bit of update on Animal Crossing, because I promised I would after we did the WeSpeak experiment. So as we discussed last week, I'm playing Animal Crossing with someone on the other side of the Earth. But I'm going to go ahead and say that the Nintendo Wi-Fi connection on the Wii, especially in games in that first 2 year time frame, cannot be trusted ever. You can't trust them to behave correctly. You can't trust them to behave poorly. They will literally do the exact opposite of whatever you expect it to do. It's like, I don't think I'm going to be able to connect this time. Bam, in the first time. Well, I got it. I just got in. Certainly I'll be able to reconnect. Nope, you're out. So she was able to get into my town the first time we tried. She got one error message, and then she tried again, and she got in. No problem. She left to go get something and to come back, and she couldn't get back in for an hour. Nintendo's just like, nope, nobody gets in. We're done here. So then I tried to go to her town, and I got stonewalled 6 or 7 times. Finally, she closed the gate, which is in Animal Crossing, when you want somebody in, you have to open the gate. She closed the gate and reopened it in the first time. So I go and I sell my fruit because fruit's more valuable in other people's town. And then come back with more fruit because I've stacked it up in front of the gate because I'm running an export business. I go back, and the game's like, nope, you can't come in. I'm like, I was there 30 seconds ago. Are you kidding me?
Oh, wow.
So she had to close her gate again and then reopen it and in the first time.
But what's sad about that is it's a first-party title, too. Like, come on.
That's why it's so bad, John.
Yeah.
The more important question is, did you try WeSpeak?
We did try WeSpeak. And I'll... Oh, it was ridiculous. So the best part is that the WeSpeak tries to do some noise cancellation, because if you don't have the headphone mode on.
Yeah.
Because everybody has headphone jacks on their TV. Oh, wait, nobody has headphone jacks on their TV. You know how the other systems handle that, Nintendo? Headphones. For the system. Yeah, as you might be able to tell from my room, it echoes a little bit, so that was an issue. But more importantly, I could hear myself post-noise canceling, so I already sounded like a robot, coming back through from Carly's end post-noise canceling again.
Oh, lovely.
So this faint sound, I could hear robot me talking, presumably to me, on about a second delay, completely obscuring her response to whatever I just asked her.
Oh my God. See, when the conduit came out, I was in Texas at the time, but my strategy to it was to actually pull WeSpeak as close to me as possible and sit both me and the microphone as far away from the TV as possible so that it would pick up very little of the feedback from the television.
Yeah.
But it still didn't work great, and that's also not the way it's meant to be used, but it helped.
Yeah. I put the mic right near me.
Here's what I did. I sat on my desk chair, which is not as comfortable as this awesome recliner, rolled to right in front of the TV, which is not the best scenario for the pointer, and it worked out decently well. The voice quality was still pretty low, especially compared to other online communication mechanisms, like any of them at all. But we were able to understand each other after fiddling with it. Except for the one time where she came into my town and was about to unload a whole bunch of fruit. And Wii Speak just decided, nah, you don't want to use it. And her light didn't turn on.
I haven't seen that blue light in years.
That was the first time I'd seen it since the conduit. And like, I was talking, she could hear me. And I'm like, why isn't she responding? And then I got the furtive message on the screen because it takes forever to type. No, no, I can hear you. My Wii Speak's not on. Oh, for God's sake. Really? Which is not one of the, by the way, my Wii Speak's not working or Wii Speak sucks is not one of the pre-rendered choices you can pick from in the text menu.
Imagine
those
that.
Those being used too much, so.
Oh, it should have been. But, you know, when we got it working, it's actually a fun way to play that game because there's little toys in the game that you can sort of play with, but really it's just kind of fun to run around that town with another person in it who's not one of your hapless villagers, because like I'll be sitting there fishing trying to catch this giant fish, and in an attempt to just completely troll, she can just go run right down the riverbank and scare it off, and they're just like, god damn it, really? But she was saying that some people have actually like set up basically what are like Animal Crossing servers. Like, there's this Animal Crossing community in spite of Nintendo's best effort that has literally plumbed the depths of this game and has set up these sorts of like massive friend code lists where they communicate with each other. They go to villages. They basically run their Animal Crossing economy. And in so doing, they basically have mastered the game as it can be mastered. Like, her village, when I went there, is like nothing I ever thought Animal Crossing could be. Perfectly manicured forests of fruit trees that generate hundreds of thousands of bells every 3 days. Like, walkways in the ground. Like, it's just ridiculous. And everybody in this community, this really strong community that Nintendo has done nothing to harbor, has managed to make this game like this really connected experience for this handful of truly dedicated people who will literally get to see everything in the game because of the collective effort of everyone in it has basically managed to map out all the things you can do. Which is kind of cool because that means I get this information for free. Which meant, like, I knew I needed to go see the New Year's thing, which I got to see it not at New Year's because my clock was wrong. So there's, like, this big countdown and fireworks show, and you get all these events going on and people running around with poppers. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I always found that, like, it has enough to hook you in, but up to a certain point, you're like, the time that you're going to have to invest to see all of that,
oh yeah,
pretty much by yourself, is just, it's not worth it.
Oh, yeah. And in their case, or in her case, she played with three other people, and their houses are ridiculous. Like, you go in, and you're just like, holy sh- I didn't know half the stuff existed. Like, they've got theme rooms, and it's absurd.
Yeah, that's really cool.
You're walking around, and they have, like, a room that's entirely devoted to this Mario set. Well, you can't even buy this Mario set. It's all pixelated. You have to shoot it down from these balloons that float past, you know, maybe once every 2 days. And you have to have the slingshot with you when it's round, which you should never have because it's worthless. It's like Nintendo basically put together this haphazard online that is succeeding in spite of the technology for this handful of truly dedicated people who have essentially exposed this game for what it really could be.
This all sounds so much like Minecraft to me, and maybe that's why I've never been very interested in Animal Crossing. I don't want to make my own fun in games. I want the Miyamotos of the world to make the fun, and I want to have the fun.
I'm curious, though, how difficult it is to make a game that's this fully featured and yet has enough flexibility where you can do things like build mazes. Mm. I mean, really, you think about it, it's basically what every Facebook game aspires to be, but it just doesn't have the capacity to be. I mean, there's real interactivity. It's what these kinds of social media games want to be. And I do wonder, in retrospect now, we had the conversation last week about what they could do with this. How can they really play on the popularity of that genre now? Like, how can they turn this game into...
James, I think you've set up a really interesting question, which is, can Animal Crossing be successful in a world where people can play Farmville and do many of the same things for free? And not only that, not only can they, but they already are. So you're talking about pulling people away from Farmville to play a $40 3DS game where they do a lot of the same shit. And by the way, the communication, the access to your friends and your social network is not going to be as good in this 3DS game as it is on Facebook.
But see, the communication, I would say, is more meaningful. It's not as broad.
Yeah.
It's not going to reach as many people because, seriously, yeah. I don't give a crap that you got 20 ears of corn. I will mute you. And in fact, anyone who has Farmville on my Facebook feed, I have muted.
Oh, absolutely.
Just as an FYI.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they're gone.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen a Farmville update in years.
I mute the person, not just the Farmville. Like,
you failed the litmus test to be my friend.
I can't trust you.
I set the trap, you fell right into it.
You have shitty taste.
It's not that. It's that if I have to mute their Farmville, they'll probably start some other social media game. The difference to me between those games is those games are really shallow. I mean, mm-hmm. they are...
That's why we don't play them. Right.
This is my third Animal Crossing game, and there's stuff in here I never knew you could do.
Well, and I completely respect that, but the fact is, an incredibly small fraction of people who play Animal Crossing will ever do any of that stuff, nor are they even interested in it. And I think the danger for Nintendo is that as shallow as Farmville and Cityville, etc. are, that is probably the extent of what a lot of the people who used to play Animal Crossing want to do in that kind of game. So just because Animal Crossing is deeper doesn't mean that the people who used to play Animal Crossing actually want to get all that depth or even ever saw it in the first place. I think a few people will go really deep with it and do all kinds of crazy stuff, but a lot of the people who play it played at a very surface level, and they liked the monotony. They liked doing the chores. They liked the writing the letters to their friends and stuff like that. Now they can do that level of stuff in a free game on Facebook, so there's not really any reason for them to go back to Animal Crossing.
Oh, no, I agree. I think that the challenge for Nintendo is how to say, look, yeah, you can do the most base level thing in Mafia Wars, but look at what else you can do. And you're like, you can't do all this stuff there.
They can say that, but they also have to actually make it appealing. They have to not only tell you that that stuff is in there, but make you want to do it.
I think that goes back to how they could use the tablet for this game. I really think there's some way they need to use this thing to really make it so it's not just something that, you know, when you're logged in, you see. It's something that makes the tablet, keeps it constantly integrated with you. And I'm not sure how they do that, but that's why I don't get paid all the money. And why I don't get paid in yen. Although that wouldn't be so unappealing right now.
Okay, so John is up next with new business.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been finishing games here, finishing games there, because that's what I do. I finish games.
Golf clap, brother. Much respect.
So I finished Uncharted 3, so my kind of wrap-up thoughts on that. I thought that it was better paced than Uncharted 2. Uncharted 2 really kind of dragged on at the end. So, you know, by the end, you know, I wasn't as tired of the whole concept as I was in Uncharted 2. But I felt that the payoff in Uncharted 3 isn't as good as Uncharted 2. You actually get to the place under the sands kind of thing, which in Uncharted 2, the ancient city that you get to is Shangri-La. It's really impactful when you actually get to the end area in Uncharted 2.
So in Uncharted 3, you just... In the third game, like, I'm sure you'll agree with me, but the moment when you enter that lost city, like the moment when you first get there and you look upon the vista, is stunning. And it made me think of that moment. I've mentioned this many times, but that moment in Eternal Darkness where you look over the necropolis underneath the house and you're like, and you can't actually really go there. You know, you never really get to look at it much closer than that. But you look on that view and you think, oh my God, look at this place that I've discovered. And you really get that feel. It's a different kind of city in Uncharted, but you really get that feel. But then once you get into it, it, for some reason, I don't know how this happened, but it becomes less and less impressive as you walk around it.
Well, I think it's the way they handle it. I totally agree. And that's kind of where the two games diverge. In Uncharted 2, you're in that final area for quite a while. But in Uncharted 3, you really aren't there for that long at all. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like it went out with a bang. Like, I didn't really feel like I had accomplished too much after I beat it. It's just kind of like, oh, that was cool. And, like, you know, the game ends and, you know, this wraps up things. But I just felt like it was kind of a letdown at the end. Like, it just wasn't, you know, you through the whole game, you're sold on, oh, you know, we have to get to this place. And if we get there, we have to get there or else this person will acquire a power that will let them to take over the world. And then when you get there, it's just kind of like, yeah, you know, you go there, you see the bad guy and you kind of do this cutscene and then everything falls apart and that's the end of the game.
Their face melts and...
Yeah.
I wish.
But yeah, so that was kind of a letdown. But you know, overall, I mean, still a great game, and definitely if you're a fan of the series, it no brainer purchase. I mean, really, really worth your time. Now, the other game that I finished was Modern Warfare 3, which, you know, of course, you put your 8 hours in and you finish Modern Warfare 3, but...
So you got to work in the morning.
Yeah.
I heard it's even shorter than that. I heard it's the shortest one.
Yeah, Billy said 5, I think, when he was on a few weeks ago.
Call it a half day, boys. See you later.
Yeah.
That was my Saturday morning.
But, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much what you would expect. It's a thrill ride. I felt like they just tried to top themselves with every single thing. There's a couple of tactics that they use to kind of shock that I felt really didn't need to be in there. It's pretty much what I expected, but I was just kind of like, okay, come on.
Well, it's one of those things where the people making it clearly think they're saying something really important about the nature of war, but the effect is really, it just kind of looks like exploitation, right?
That's exactly it, yeah.
So wait. I know this is spoilerific here, but is there any real motivation ever offered besides they're really evil?
Russians trying to undermine peace efforts to take over the world. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's very jingoistic. It has been from the first Modern Warfare.
It is very...
Well, I mean, yeah, the first one was bad, but this sounds horrible.
It's because Hillary tried to rig their elections. That's what Putin told me, anyway.
Yep.
What, when you were out riding bears together?
Yeah, I was riding a tiger that he shot.
Kissing babies and shit, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Riding horseback with your shirt off.
While kissing babies, yes.
And he was doing karate.
Yeah. This story hinges more on what can we do to set up a cool set piece for this upcoming level. In that sense, it works really well. So the one thing, of course, the big draw with it is the online, which is really fast, really quick. If you're into Twitch shooters, you'll love it.
I still haven't played the online multiplayer in Modern Warfare 2.
Johnny's waiting for the competition to die down, and by that he means no one plays it anymore.
Yeah. Right. Maybe now's the time for me to get into it.
You should be good now. But yes, they have a Spec Ops mode, which you can play co-op.
Now that shit was fun in the second one.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's interesting because of the way that they've attached ranks to everything. So in Spec Ops now, you can rank up in Spec Ops. One, I mean, I think in the normal, like, deathmatch, I think I'm, like, level 13 of 80. They've upped it to 80. It used to be 60, I think, to prestige.
These go to 11.
Yeah, it's completely, like, that's Modern Warfare 3 in a nutshell. It takes Modern Warfare to 11. But I don't even know how high you can rank up in Spec Ops, but, like, that's, like, a separate mode unto itself now that you can rank up in. Hmm. But it's interesting because they've kind of, like... World of Warcraft did this franchise, because if you look at it, you pay $15 a month for WoW, and over the course of a year, that's $180. But now that they have, like, the Elite service, right, which I think is $50 a month,
it's or 50
bucks
a year.
Jesus.
$50 for a year.
$50 a month, and you have to go wash their cars.
It's 50 for the year, so effectively you're paying like $60 for Xbox Live if you just buy it at MSRP,
right.
$60 for the game, which, of course... You know, it's not like WoW where you buy the game once and then just get updates, but it's like every single year you will pretty much have to pay another $60 for the new Call of Duty game. Mm-hmm. So it's like $60 for Live, $60 for the game, $50 for Elite. That's $170. Congratulations. You have just been World of Warcrafted as a Call of Duty fan.
I hate Activision.
Well, to be fair, Activision doesn't get much of that Live money, though.
No, true. But the other two are all them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, all that said, I'm enjoying it. I mean, it's Modern Warfare. It has a couple of tweaks here and there, but very much sticks to the tried and true. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really have to change because it sold, like, what, 6.5 million on the first day or something like
yes.
that. So people seem to like it.
All right, Greg, so it's your turn to wrap up new business.
Yeah, so I'll start with a late arrival, actually. Today, Nintendo of Europe sent out the download codes for the Kid Icarus 3D Classics version. Downloaded it and gave it a quick little play today. Didn't get very far, as you might imagine, but the presentation is quite nice with the new backgrounds. I mean, they're definitely, you know, a bit more detailed than you would have seen on the NES, mm-hmm. Even if it had been a latter-day NES game. But, you know, it kind of fits in well enough. It doesn't feel completely sort of non-cohesive. And you get quite a few layers and you've just got some separation there. Although, the thing is, it's the effect of that at the moment. I mean, I can't remember exactly how it kind of breaks down the different styles of levels because I've never played it. So I'm just kind of going from what I've heard people say about it over the years. But, you know, at the minute, I've just been playing, you know, the very first parts of the game where you're just going up and up and up and up. Mm-hmm. This vertical progression. So you're not really having that usual kind of scrolling that would really bring out the difference in the layers more.
I think the side-scrolling levels are generally kind of screen to screen.
But, you know, it's a nice sort of presentation. They haven't, like, done anything crazy, like, fill out the entire screen. You know, it's presented in its original aspect ratio. I think it's actually its original resolution, because it doesn't quite fill all the vertical as well. But I'm not sure whether I like it yet. I mean, I've died a fair bit. It does seem like I might have to grind to get more health, which is not my favourite thing from the original Metroid.
It won't have any of your other favourite things from the original Metroid either.
Perhaps not. I will give it a go. So it was free, but it'll get a certain amount of my time, and we'll see if it can prove itself worthy to get more. But I've been playing quite a lot for 3DS is Shinobi. So I mentioned I purchased this last week. I've got into it now a fair bit. I'm not really sure how far or not I am into it, to be honest, because I haven't really read about like how many levels there are or anything. But I've cleared quite a few levels, and certainly the nature of its difficulty that people talked about in reviews and things has been amply demonstrated. It's much more sort of old-fashioned, actually, than other games that are trying to be throwback games, 2D games. You know, they will still tend to maybe like put a lot more checkpoints in there or do things with lives differently from old-school games. But with this, I mean, some of it depends on what difficulty you choose. Like, I think if you just choose easy, you get infinite lives and continues. And then if you choose normal, which is what I'm doing, you get limited lives but infinite continues. And then eventually I'm very hard. It's like one life and three continues and that's it. But it saves after each level. But the levels themselves are really quite long. I mean, I cleared one today and I died quite a few times, you know, using some of those extra lives you have. That added to the length of it. But it took me, it actually has a clock on the bottom screen that keeps track of it. It took me over 20 minutes to beat this level. And then it actually, on the sort of score tabulation screen that comes up, it told me that the target time for it, so I assume that boosts your score if you reach it, is 17 minutes. So these are long levels, they really are. And that is interesting, of course, because it is a portable game. So you might think that they would have shaded it more to the bite-sized style, but they really haven't. In some ways, I respect that. You know, what it's kind of boiled down to is it's very much more, I've played it very much more the way that I play games on Virtual Console, because you can essentially suspend it. I mean, it's not literally at frozen at the very moment that you press the menu button like it would be on Wii, but you know, you can press save and quit and you'll come back at that last checkpoint. But then on the other hand, you still have to worry about this kind of old school thing of like, you know, you've got this level that could take a quarter of an hour, and if you run out of lives, you go all the way back to the start of the level. So in that way, it's not great for just saying, oh, I'll just pick it up and nonchalantly kind of have a go and all that. You know, if you're going to kind of invest the amount of time to play all the way to an end of the level, and then maybe if you fail, say, getting quite far, you're really going to want to, in many ways, go straight back to it so that you can apply what you learned from that, you know? If there was something like an enemy caught you out or this, what you don't really want to do, it's going to be very difficult to make progress if you just say, oh, well, you know, that caught me out this time, I'll leave it, you know, and come back like 2 days later. Chances are the same thing's probably just going to come back and get you if it's kind of faded a bit in the background. So that's kind of the way I've been playing it, is much more like a Virtual Console game or Wii. I haven't been playing it on the train or any of this kind of stuff. I've just been playing at home, focusing, concentrating to overcome these challenges. And I, obviously, because I do a lot of Virtual Console gaming, enjoy that a lot. And the fact that it's on 3DS doesn't really enhance the game a great deal. I mean, graphically, you could see it looks very much more like a DS game than most 3DS games do.
Yeah.
The geometry of the objects is quite accurate, because everything, you know, it's a 2D side-scrolling game design, but it's for polygonal graphics that it's built out of. And these are quite angular designs, you know, they're not high polygon counts. And then in terms of the textures, they're quite rough as well, you know, so it doesn't necessarily benefit from the 3DS like that. I mean, I think aesthetically, it's a little more appealing than Kryptonite Spider-Man games. Ironically, it has a more distinctly comic book look to it than their comic book game, in the way that they use colour, some of the sort of stark use of black and things like that. You know, it has a comic book sort of aesthetic to it that, with perhaps more polish and a bigger budget, I think that really could have looked very attractive. And in this case, it sort of functions well enough. I wouldn't call it an ugly game by any means, but it isn't impressive either. They're good enough that you're not going to get distracted by it. You just enjoy the gameplay, which is, as you might expect from the Spider-Man games, if you've played them, the Shinobi character controls really nicely. He's got, you know, a nice sort of pace to his movements, the jumping, everything feels tight and spot on. And the actual precision of the gameplay is an interesting thing, because there's one of its central mechanics is blocking, or the parrying, they call it. So enemies will throw stuff at you, some enemies will shoot at you with various kinds of guns, shoot arrows at you, all kinds of different stuff, but you can pretty much block any of it with a touch of the shoulder button, but the timing's got to be right. You can't just stand there and hold the block button down and it blocks it and all that. So in that way, it's kind of taking the way you deal with enemies to another level than sort of what you might have had in an actual old school game, which probably would have just been about dodging their attacks. Here, you've got this sort of parrying thing, but at the same time, it's not going to slow the game down like other games do. You know, I mean, for instance, I've talked about the Blood Rain Betrayal PSN game, and I think that has something that a lot of these sort of Western developed 2D games have, that are kind of throwback games, but they want to put something in there to sort of feel like it's sort of modernized in some way. And a lot of what that ends up being is combat and kill rooms.
Yeah. Which Kryptonite's games have done in the past as well. I mean,
indeed they have, exactly. I was going to mention Hatsworth does it, yeah. Of course. Way Forward have done it a lot with Blood Rain. And then, yeah, Kryptonite Spider-Man games are like that. And that's why I really like the fact Shinobi does not. Even though the levels are pretty long, they're not stretched out by just like, okay, you know, here's a bunch of guys for ages, deal with it. You know, this is much more fluid feeling to it. I mean, it's something, you know, with Blood Rain, I mean, I enjoyed the game, but the fact that you had so many of these kill rooms is such a huge part of the experience, you know, sort of interrupting the flow of the more traditional kind of platforming action and all that. I really didn't ever want to play it for more than a level at a time. There was something about that sort of stop-start rhythm to the gameplay that I just didn't get on with to keep piling level after level. With this, I'm much more happy to just keep playing it because it's got a better flow to it. Although, having said that, there are other ways in which they pad the level's length a bit that are sketchy, like some vehicular sections. There was one I was just doing today where you're sort of on a surfboard kind of thing and you're going down some rapids or something and you control it with the gyroscope. I mean, that was pretty ropey, to say the least. So where they've tried to inject some variety, a lot of the time it doesn't really work that well, and it does seem just a bit like padding. But it's nowhere near as pervasive as the sorts of things you get where, you know, you just fight a bunch of guys for ages in these other 2D games. So I think it is more authentically old school than a lot of these sort of throwback style games that you've seen on a lot of different platforms. So I've been enjoying it a great deal. I think the bosses are very good as well, the ones I've played so far. So, you know, that's always very important to me in this kind of game, that they feel, you know, challenging and they're like real events. And they usually have like some little opportunity that they give you to do like an extra special bit of damage and stuff. And the score system, I think, is well conceived as well. It's rewarding you very much for, you know, not making mistakes, for using that parry system very effectively. And I could see getting into that a little bit, but I haven't yet to play through the entire game yet to kind of see the range of levels, like which ones I'd like to replay again.
Well, I'm looking forward to Shinobi. I'm hoping to catch up with it. I mean, not until after Mass Effect 3 comes out, of course, but eventually I would. I enjoyed it at E3. I agree with all your comments. I mean, I thought at E3 the graphics weren't great. They weren't bad, but they weren't really great either. And then there was a horse riding bit where you're kind of riding into the screen and you're dodging trees, and I thought that was pretty dicey. So, but I thought the 2D gameplay looked really fun. And there's a grappling mechanic, isn't there? sort of.
Yeah, it's a very low-key kind of part of the game. Basically, I mean, you've got this little vertical grappling hook that could come out, and what it's mainly used...
Like Contra 4?
No, it's not that. It only goes a little bit above his head. So what you're generally doing is, like, there might be a secret platform that you might see right at the top of the screen's view. And then you think, oh, yeah, if I double jump and use the little grappling hook, I might actually be able to latch onto that and then pop up out of the top of it and see some secret there or something. That's generally how it's used. So it's not like a big part of the gameplay or anything. It's just, it's used sort of at those kinds of moments. And I have to give the level design credit for that as well. There's a lot of little tucked away areas, the things that might give you a powered up projectile attack, or you might find like some of these coins that unlock bonus points or achievements or extra lives. You know, there's useful stuff to be found in a lot of these nooks and crannies of levels that, you know, if you're playing through the level for the nth time, having been frustrated by being defeated by the boss or something, you'll probably just blow straight past them. But when you're first going through them, if you're of a mind to kind of poke around, that there is actually quite a lot to find. And I appreciate that because it does make it sort of less monotonous, the process of sort of going through the levels multiple times.
All right, well, that's all of our new business. So now we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we've got our 2012 predictions, as well as a look back at last year's predictions. So it should be a lot of fun. Make sure you stick around and don't forget to regulate.
Regulators. You regulate any stealing of his property. We're damn good, too. But you can't be any geek off the street. Got to be handy with the steal, if you know what I mean. Earn your keep.
Regulators! Mauna
was a
of course not. Welcome back to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, it is January 2012, and that means it's time to look back at our ridiculous predictions from last year and make new predictions equally ridiculous for this year, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So we've done this for the past couple years in a row. Last year, we did all our predictions about what would happen in the industry, what would happen with Nintendo. Of course, you have to remember at that time, 3DS was not out yet. Wii U had not been shown at all. It was just rumors at that point. So last year, in addition to our industry predictions, we also named our most anticipated games. I think the idea there was to kind of, you know, we had Mario and Zelda coming out last year, obviously, and so we kind of tried to get away from that. Although Mario 3D Land had not even really been teased yet. That was at GDC, wasn't it?
That's right. We didn't know it existed at that point.
So we didn't know about that.
We were all looking forward to Zelda.
Certainly, we knew Zelda, and we decided not to go with Zelda because it was too obvious. We kind of did some more personal kind of pet picks that, you know, games that we hope will be really good, maybe some underdog games. All right, so let's go over our predictions from last year. Greg took the time to summarize our comments from episode 226. And they are as follows. You guys chime in when you have something to say about these predictions from last year.
I have many things to say.
I'm a genius. We had all kinds of crazy ideas about what would happen in the year 2011. So Greg said, next level games will do something with Nintendo again, maybe Mario American Football. Now that turned out to be true, not a sports game, but they're making Luigi's Mansion 2.
Yep.
Yeah, the main reason I said it as a hope because they'd just spent 2010 making dreadful light gun style games that were licensed from Activision or whatever. So I was hoping that as a bounce. And I think Luigi's Mansion 2 would qualify as a nice bounce back from that particular kind of perdition.
I was hoping we were going to get to go, inside information. But we don't have any of that here.
Greg said that Zelda would come in late summer. Not quite, but you'll hear it.
Very late summer.
Yeah, some of that presupposed the idea that they would actually have, like, Wii games that we didn't know about yet, ready to reveal.
Yeah.
So, the next one, Greg said, Nintendo's biggest holiday game will be a Mario 3DS game, probably a new platformer, or perhaps Mario Kart.
We end up getting both.
We got both, and we don't have the NPD sales yet. Now, I'm going to say that there is a terrifying possibility that Nintendo's biggest seller was in fact Just Dance 3. But aside from that, Mario 3D Land might be it.
We do know that in Japan, those two games there were two of the, I think, only three games in Japan at all last year that sold 1 million units.
Mm-hmm.
And Mario Kart just edged out Mario 3D Land. But of course, that was the thinking, was that, you know, well, Zelda might not have to be in the holiday slot because by then they'll be focusing more just on 3DS.
Right.
But to get both the sort of Mario big games out there was kind of a surprise that they would be so close together.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly they don't, you know, you look at the Japanese case, don't seem to have hurt each other's sales at all in that regard, because they're number one and two on the chart for the year.
Greg also said, little info will be given about the next console in 2011, and it's definitely not coming out in that year. Now, I would argue that a lot of info came out about it.
Oh, it was a lot more than I thought.
I mean, we got to play it. I mean, that's the big thing.
I mean, I think the real issue is, in some ways, I mean, they weren't necessarily that much farther along than I might have thought, because they didn't really have any actual games to show.
Yeah,
you know,
but they showed a lot more of it than any of us really expected.
Yeah, I mean, and some of that was definitely related to another thing that I didn't foresee, which was the amount of information that was getting out of their control.
Yeah,
we were just hearing so much about what the system was from leaks and all that sort of thing. I would have imagined that they could have controlled information somewhat better than that. And so that may have factored into them giving it an early kind of showing that I thought was the sort of thing that they were past at this point, that they, being a market leader, you more sort of wait until you're ready to really blow it out and say, okay, this is it, and we've got everything ready to show you, so, which of course is what this year's E3 showing for Wii U will be.
Right.
So they definitely surprised me in that sense. But obviously the fact that it didn't come out was no great shock.
Yeah.
No.
And Greg's most anticipated game of 2011 was Monster Tale.
Yep, that's with the developer's new game that was published by Majesco. I don't think it ever got a European release.
It did not, no.
Did you play it, though?
No, I have not played it. And, you know,
yeah, that was, it's still anticipated.
Huh.
Johnny was not that big on it, you know, by the time he did get to play. You liked it, didn't
you? I liked it, but I'll just go ahead and spoil it. It was my most anticipated game as well of 2011, and it obviously didn't make my top 5 list. It probably wouldn't have made my top 10 list. I like it, but it's not amazing
for
it by any means.
So in that sense, it wasn't going to push me over the edge to bother to import something when you've got, you know, plenty of affordable domestic releases that are there that, you know, would probably be just as enjoyable. So didn't really pan out, but, you know, it seems like it had merit as a game. So I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on that developer, what they're doing in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, so John was next, and John's predictions were that the 3DS would get Netflix streaming. Way to be bold there, John.
like every other electronic device short of a blender,
yeah.
It has Netflix. Hey.
So John also said Zelda would come in late summer. He agreed with Greg on that one, and said that Dragon Quest X would be released in Japan before the end of the year.
We only got to see it again at the end.
Yeah, it was actually just real substantive information came out.
And it became a Wii U game.
Towards the end of the year. Dual platform. Yeah. Very, mm-hmm. very interesting.
Yeah, I didn't realize it would become would fall off the face of the earth like it did there for a while. But
oh, no, we haven't even gotten to falling off the face of the earth yet. That comes in my predictions.
What's fascinating about it, I think, is that we all know the pattern that Dragon Quest games very often right at the end of a console's life, but this is pushing it. I mean, really, like, I think if it'd come out at the exact same time as Skyward Sword, that would have qualified as the end of the Wii's life cycle.
I'm wondering more if now they're just pushing it because they want it to be a Wii U game, but they almost feel obligated to put out a Wii version for some crazy reason.
Because that actually has the numbers in Japan, the install base is there. You can't ignore that.
Yeah, but I mean, if they put this out on Wii U alone, do you think it would sell systems?
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it won't sell as much as they would like it to.
It would definitely sell a certain amount of systems, though whether it would be a humongous system selling kit is more open to question, because, first of all, Dragon Quest has not normally been in that position. We don't actually know if it would, because they normally wait until the PS2 has sold millions upon millions upon millions of units and release the game at the end of its cycle, when they already know. Or, you know, with the DS was already clearly on its way to being dominant. When they decided to make DQ9 a DS game, and then it came out.
It came out on the other side of the mountain.
It came out in 2009 in Japan, didn't it? So not really at the end, but then the DS did have quite an extraordinarily long life cycle. Yeah. So we don't know whether it would shift like huge numbers of systems, but at the end of the day, what we do know is that if they've got a system like the Wii that's already got a huge proven install base, they want to sell it on that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and you look at the, you know, there are people in Japan who pretty much only play Dragon Quest, so they don't necessarily want to buy a new system for it. They're quite happy to play it on their old system.
That's right. They bought that Wii for Dragon Quest Swords, okay?
Yeah, exactly. They've been waiting for years for the follow-up. Now, John, your most anticipated game was Dragon Quest VI, which, yet again, I'm pretty sure you have not played, right?
Didn't even buy it. No,
I'm pretty sure you referenced when because it was coming out quite shortly after we recorded that episode. So it was in February, was it not, in America? But you did reference when making that pick that, you know, there was still the matter of finishing Chrono Trigger and all this kind of stuff, which, of course, eventually you did, but it was months removed from when the game came out.
I still have Dragon Quest IV actually sitting on the shelf. Okay. So, you know, it's right up there at the top of my queue to finish. Yeah. Apparently, you know.
And you put like, what, was it 150 hours into 9, was it, John?
Yeah.
Divided by some number.
All right, so James predicted that Pikmin 3 would still be dead in 2011, which...
And it is.
That's up for debate, I suppose.
No, it got taken out back and shot and restarted. I don't think it's still dead. I think it is buried dead.
Well, I think it'll come back as an on-rail shooter.
It certainly didn't show it. I was surprised that Miyamoto actually mentioned it at all, but he did mention it, and he did say, we're still working on it, and he actually sort of gave a sense of when it would be released for the first time.
Yeah, but by changing its platform.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he basically said that Wii game we were working on, it's not that anymore.
Yeah.
The game that they talked about is literally dead. It is a new game now.
Well, yeah, I guess you can argue that, so. All right, fair enough. Okay. You also said the last story will come to Western markets. Now, when you said that, did you think Europe but not North America? Because that's probably going to be the case.
And also, of course, it did miss 2011.
It got announced in 2011, so at least I'm kind of there.
Yeah, sure. I mean, interestingly, when James was talking about that last story was about to come out in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because they just had the last story event like a couple days before we recorded that I stayed up for some ungodly hour watching.
Yeah, so you see that it's much like with Xenoblade, you know, it's a full 12-month plus delay even to Europe. And I think some of that is probably because there was the fact that NOA passed on it, and then maybe the Nintendo of Europe's considering its options and then actually decides to go ahead with it, probably protracted
the
process.
They almost certainly, I mean, I don't know they've ever had a project of that scope they had to deal with.
No,
wrong.
Surely not.
So they probably had to go, can we do this? Are we really ready?
So that's why it's been so long. But of course, the fact that then Xenoblade, despite NOA passing on it, will get some sort of release in America raises some possibility that the last story could see one as well, presumably sometime in the second half of this year.
Mm-hmm. Now, I believe at the time, I sat there and I believe I was asked which one I thought had the better chance. And I picked the wrong horse.
Well, I mean, your rationale for why, you know, it had potential to sell in the Western markets is that it has some more sort of Western stylings to its game design, you know, some of the sort of like the cover elements in the combat or some of the online elements, this sort of, and perhaps the art direction or the things like that. So, I mean, it does seem more Western flavored than Xenoblade. I agree with that much.
Oh, Xenoblade is Japanese as hell.
Yeah. Ryan is more Western flavored than any man. Fuck Ryan so bad.
All right, so, and I love this. James's most anticipated game was The Last Story and 3DS launch.
Yeah, he said, I will be picking one up on launch day. Promised that.
And I did.
And he did, yeah.
So. And three games, which means I had more games than anyone else in the world at the launch of the system.
So James, technically 3 for 3?
Yeah, well, he really only made 2 predictions, but...
Yeah.
My anticipation kind of counts as a prediction, and guess what goes my most anticipated game of the year next year? Oh, it's not that hard to figure out, is it? Because there's no other games to
It's
know.
The 3DS launch. So my predictions were that the vitality sensor won't be spoken of, but will eventually be incorporated into something else rather than getting its own release. I guess we're still waiting to see on that one, but it was not spoken of, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, the second part of that is more long range than just 2011,
It was spoken about at an Ubisoft event where they went and made their own thing, but that was 2010.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was a pretty safe prediction, but it certainly bore out.
And then I said Zelda will launch by October at the latest. Little more conservative than what Greg and John were saying about it, but obviously still I was off by a month there. So,
did I not have a prediction on when Zelda would launch?
No,
you never actually either it didn't make it in or there was something, but you went along with the sort of general idea that maybe it wasn't the prototypical Nintendo holiday game anymore. Mm. But at the same time, you never actually said it won't come out.
I was hedging.
So I love this next one. I said, we'll be ready for a 3DS Lite by the end of 2011.
That's more perception than anything.
It's basically like, well, 3DS isn't out yet, but I already know the hardware sucks.
I already hate it.
In which case, you were pretty much ready for a 3DS Lite when you bought the 3DS.
I was, yeah. And I will say, I mean, I think by the end of 2011, Nintendo had made the firmware and the software on the 3DS... I'm very happy with, but I still think the hardware, and I don't think I'm the only one on this, I really feel like the hardware does kind of need a revision. And, you know, now we're hearing rumors that they may actually be doing that pretty soon.
Well, Capcom seems to think that it was lacking something.
They seem to think that revision should be entirely powered by the IR sensor as well. So, I mean...
Yeah, I mean...
The CirclePad Pro is the opposite of 3DS Lite.
No, it's the 3DS Insane.
So my next prediction, no friend codes for 3DS. Now, I kind of got... I was kind of halfway on this one. Obviously, there are friend codes, but they're done in a much better way.
There are explicitly friend codes for 3DS.
Yes, yes. There are literally friend codes for 3DS, but not for the individual games.
Right.
So I will gladly be wrong about that because I'm fairly happy with the way they ended up going with it.
And also, if you actually, in person, you can exchange, you can become friends with someone without actually putting in the code.
Yeah, that would be a great feature if I knew more than one person who has a 3DS.
I know. But it's still just another, you know, case where they were getting a little more relaxed about the idea of people actually adding people to their friends list rather than putting sort of the maximum layers of tedium between you and actually doing it.
Yeah. So my next prediction is that the Super Wii, which was my predicted name for the new console, and I still think that would be a much better name.
It's still better.
I still think Super Wii is a pretty cool...
No, they're both awful. They're both terrible. They're both abysmal names.
Swee!
See, there we go. Look, John just proved why this is a worse name.
Swee, obviously big in Arkansas.
There you go. Proven. That is the worst name for anything ever.
You could use Jerry Jones to sell it and everything.
Greg, you're just making my point more concrete.
He's not going to fire himself, Greg, you know.
And that paragon of loyalty, Bobby Petrino, for why you could stick with Nintendo.
I could just sit here and just... I don't even have to make the arguments anymore.
As I say, the reason why it's better for me is it is clearly saying that it's going beyond the Wii, whereas Wii U is a modifier like DSi.
It's also easier to say.
Yeah, Wii U it's bad. It's linguistically bad, but more importantly, from my point of view, it's bad in terms of branding, in terms of what it infers about what this product is.
Right.
So, you know, I still think it's possible that they will rethink the name.
Hold that thought. But as for whether I said the Super Wii could be announced in Japan at the end of the year, when I said that, I think that's probably what Nintendo's plan was to do it like sort of between Christmas and New Year's, which they've done before.
No, I don't know. I mean, they had a lot of units ready. I think they were planning on showing at E3. I just think that their thunder got stolen a bit. I mean, they seemed prepared to show it. They seemed to more want that to be like how they ended their press conference.
Yeah, I mean, I still think some of the reasons why, you know, Johnny and myself might have thought that it would be talked about less, or certainly not talked about as soon as E3, is evident in what they did with the presentation. You know, I mean, it wasn't that warmly received in the outside.
Right.
It was awkward, and software looked really rushed and thrown together, and the hardware was non-final. You know,
well, you get bizarre situations like where Iwata says, well, you know, we are working on a... Well, no, we're not working on a Smash Brothers game, but we will be in the future.
Right. Well, they've done that before.
Oh, so you've not killed the franchise. Well, that's reassuring. I mean, you know, it's faintly ridiculous sort of stuff. That's why you wouldn't think they'd put themselves in that situation, because the timeline doesn't seem right. But they did, for whatever reasons that they thought.
So anyway, my most anticipated game was, again, Monster Tail, which I was fairly disappointed with. It's up there with one of my most disappointing games. Not that it's bad, but it certainly did not live up to my expectations for it.
My game lives up to my expectations. Wait.
Last story, yeah. Okay, so now let's get into our new predictions. We're going to go around the crew and do one at a time until we run out of them. And Greg, I'll let you go first, just like last year.
All right, well, like last year, my first one is more of a hope, I'll confess to that, than a very rashly thought-out prediction. And it's also based on some sort of projection of cyclical behavior. So, in 2008, Good Feel produced Wario Land Shake It. Mm-hmm. In 2010, they produced Kirby's Epic Yarn. In 2012, it's got to be Yoshi, hasn't it? Finally, the Yoshi game.
It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, no, of course not. That's the joke.
it makes the most sense, though.
Yoshi hasn't had a game of any sort since Yoshi's Island DS, which was 6 years ago. No, well, yeah, pretty much 5 years ago, but, you know. A long time ago now, and obviously console-wise, you've got to go back to Yoshi's Story and stuff, but first of all, as I said, you know, this sort of two-year cycle seems plausible. Secondly, I think you have to look at the fact that over the past few years, one of the staples of things that actually still sell on Wii is the side-scrolling platformer. Mm. Even look at the new Kirby game in Japan. It's already sold over 500,000 copies, which makes it one of the biggest selling games of the year. You know, and I'm not sure how brilliantly it's done in other markets, but you know, certainly something like that is pretty tidy for them. I think it's the kind of thing that could well be on Wii this year to kind of give it something to go on as we sort of work our way towards probably the Wii U launching at the end of the year, I would think.
So you think this Yoshi game would be for Wii?
I think it's most likely to be on Wii, but you could also see it on 3DS. I think there's, you know, if you think of going to something that approximates the Yoshi's Island, the original Yoshi's Island aesthetic, the childlike drawings and the kind of pop-up book style in 3D, I think it would look fantastic on 3DS. So just like based from stuff like Mighty Switch Force and all that, I think it would look amazing. So, I mean, you could even conceive of something that you could do with it on Wii U, like with the tablet controller or something. You could probably, this idea maybe if you kind of interacted with the world by drawing it on it, because it would look like a colouring book kind of aesthetic. But I think given what Goodfield's been doing, it's been, you know, producing these games that look absolutely amazing on Wii, you know, within those constraints, it's the kind of thing that we would expect, I think, a whole year, most of the year, before we get to the new system. They've got to still be releasing some things on Wii that's going to sell. You know, and there is still a market for this kind of game. And they've done Kirby twice, and they've done Donkey Kong and Mario, and, you know, who's left?
It's Super Yoshi, Princess you know. Peach 3D is going to suck for you.
We've still got Waluigi Land coming.
Well, Luigi Land, you know, with you've still got the pointer as well. I think, you know, if you look at something like kind of the Yoshi Story style, where you're using the analog stick to control him on the nunchuck, but then instead of having to like stop and aim, you could actually have a lot more flexibility by aiming with the pointer. It's always been something I've thought of would just work great with some of the established Yoshi gameplay conventions. So it's, again, I don't know that it's necessarily that probable, but it does make sense on quite a few levels, so I'm willing to go with it.
Yeah, okay. So, John, what do you think?
I predict that F-Zero is going to be coming to the 3DS. They're going to announce it at E3.
Oh, shit.
It's going to be called F-Zero Motion Sickness Edition.
I had that as one of mine as well. The other thing I was thinking about, who could make it?
Yeah, that's a big question.
Monster Games, dude.
Monster Games, it was someone I considered, considering they did Pilot Wings Resort.
Your cart turns into a robot.
They've got racing game experience, but here's a wacky one.
Oh, I know where you're going with this, I think.
What if taking their recent experience in designing, designing courses... for racing games, Retro were to do F-Zero.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
You know, they were working on what was apparently an abortion of a racing game at one point, so maybe they can get all together.
At that point, the company was kind of in disarray, and they had a bunch of projects they had to toss. So
I like everything I hear about that game in history now makes it sound worse and worse.
I would say I think Retro is not a crazy idea, but also... maybe this is really far-fetched, but I think it'd be really cool if they let Shinen take a crack at it. You know, they've made an F-Zero-like game for WiiWare that's very impressive. They're a really small company, but at this point, is Nintendo gonna, like, take a really big development risk on F-Zero? You know, to me, it's a good fit, like, because they could do it super cheap and get something that would be very impressive and would look like F-Zero. You know, graphically, it would be a showcase, and I think that would be a good way to do it. It'd be super cheap. I just don't know if they would want to go through the trouble of having to work with a German developer.
No, I mean, I think they would probably hand it over to somebody internal, like in a D-team, be like, all right, guys, don't screw this up.
I mean, Monster Games makes plenty of sense, you know, because they already did that, you know, with the Excite truck thing.
And they have 3DS experience.
And they've got 3DS experience. So, I mean, that's probably the most logical, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, they could hand it over to somebody like ND Cube, who they do a lot of work through. Who's
Tube Sliders, I knew you were going to go there.
Well, no, they've done other racing games, but they did do the sliding of tubes, yes.
Tube Sliders. We're still talking about video games, right?
Look, the only reason that game sticks my mind is because A, it has the bad title, and B, because it came out like 4 days after F-Zero. It's like, are you stupid?
Yeah, that was unfathomable. Although, it wasn't Nintendo published.
Tube Sliders. it's terrible.
But you know, they've worked with ND Cube a lot lately. I mean, they did, what game was that?
Was it Mario Party or Wii Party or Wii Play Motion? They did one of the party. And, I mean, they've been involved in a lot of that stuff.
So, John, I like your pick a lot. I think in an F-Zero, I do think 3DS is the perfect platform to bring that back. I really do. That would be awesome. It'd be a great holiday release for them. Make the fans really happy.
Oh, yeah.
Okie doke. So, James, what's your first prediction?
So I want to say that I've been thinking about this for a while, and then Nintendo screwed me a couple weeks ago when they went ahead and announced they were going to have DLC for Fire Emblem. Because that was like, that Fire Emblem game is going to have downloadable content, because that is the perfect game for it. And then it's like, yep, it is. F your predictions. So I'm going to jump to my second prediction, which is that they will have a truly online game in their launch lineup for the Wii U, Super Mario Brothers, Me and You.
Really? Mario Online. That's pretty bold, man. I hope you're right.
But, I mean, it almost has to at this point. They can't just put out another new Super Mario Brothers Me.
Oh, I think they can.
They probably can, but remember, they've only launched it on systems that have already sold 20 million units. Yeah. I mean, if this is supposed to be the system launch game, and I don't think there's going to be another Mario game ready for the system's launch, or even within a year of the launch, this one kind of has to be substantial. Hmm. Like, it's got to do something besides add your Miis to the game.
It would make sense with the idea of incorporating the Miis, because the Miis are a lot more fun to play with. If they're online, you can see the other person's Mii.
Precisely. And it's more about a single-player experience at that point.
Yeah.
Because it's like, this is my Mii. I can see what I'm doing. And everyone would be able to use their tablets, regardless of whether or not it's how many that system can support. We still don't really know. I think there's going to be content that... Did anybody here actually play Crystal Chronicles with the four GBAs?
Yeah, like once.
They could do things on that screen, like while the rest of the players are doing stuff, you could go into your screen and tick around in there and not interfere with what they're doing. Because in that particular game, you could go into the shops and things and see on your screen what's going on while everybody else is still on the main screen messing around. And that, to me, was one of the coolest things about that game.
The coolest thing to me was that everyone had their secret goals that they were trying to do without letting the other people know it. So you were cooperating, but you had this secret that you were burying, that you were trying to play the game. And like, you're trying to get the most gold, because if you get the most gold, you get an experience bonus at the end. But you're trying to do it without letting other people know, because if they figure it out, then they could interfere with your goal and try to keep you from getting it. I love that. I thought that was amazing.
Or there'd be more esoteric ones, like how you have to fight enemies and things.
Yeah, like don't use magic, you know. Then you have to try to find some way to explain to your friends why you're not healing them.
Why are you just attacking? What is your malfunction?
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I'm above the law. I mean, there's so many ways they can do that, and doing it online works out really well, because they can make the screen entirely clear of clutter. Everybody can have their own tablet. It just seems to work.
Cool. So my first prediction is that, man, this is, you guys are going to laugh at me a year from now, but I'm going to predict that there will be either a 2D Metroid or a 2D Castlevania game released this year.
Well, 2D Castlevania game doesn't count. In fact, I'm not even allowing that prediction.
It's been years. It's been 2008 since the
Order of Ecclesia was 2008,
Let me take a step back. You mean on a handheld?
I mean on any platform. Could be WiiWare or...
Well, no, we had Harmony of Assets. That got released.
That doesn't count. No,
it counts.
And you also had Castlevania The Adventure Rebirth for WiiWare.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he was talking about something that was a more typical Igarashi-era Metroidvania, you know, that has not come out since Ecclesia.
I think Igarashi is a four-letter word at that company right now.
No, he's working on stuff. It's not Castlevania, but
his bullwhip technique.
I mean, the point is, there was a time where they were coming out once every couple of years, you know, I mean, that was a bankable thing, but now it's not so much.
I think it's had the break that it needed, and it is time for it to reemerge with the new twist or whatever. But, dude, on the 3DS, a 2D Castlevania game would look so fucking awesome. And Metroid is the same way, and I think... I originally thought about mixing Goodfeel in here for the 2D Metroid thing. I think that's pretty out there, but I wouldn't completely rule it out. I think it would be pretty amazing for Goodfeel to make a 2D Metroid game, because it's so against the style of their previous two games. I think they're completely capable of doing it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's certain elements of Wario Land Shake It that are a bit in that direction, because, of course, the original Wario Land games were developed by the people within R&D1 that made the Metroid games. And so there's a bit of that Metroid DNA in all the Wario games. And, you know, when you're doing some of the treasure chests, trying to get those, you know, it's a bit like getting tricky missile expansions in Zero Mission or something. So they're not completely alien, but in terms of what actually Sakamoto's doing, of course, we know from Nintendo Direct that he's making that kicky trick thing.
Yes, he is.
So that's what he's been doing to date. What he's going to be occupied with from that point on, obviously, is a mystery again.
Well, he'll probably work on a new WarioWare after that, because he's very involved in the WarioWare series.
Well, that was I think that was very much the WarioWare guys, you know, him included, making that kicky trick.
It was,
game, which it's all about deciphering what people are saying, is it?
Like, it's weird. Like, even though it'll be in Japanese, just watch a video and you'll kind of understand what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I would always be interested in what they're sort of coming up with, because, of course, Rhythm Heaven is another one of their, you know, ideas that is a favourite of mine. But this seems like it probably, the kicky trick will never see the light of day, presumably outside, and you can't really import it when it's about comprehension.
It would be a hard thing to localise, but I think conceptually it looks like it's a lot of fun, so they might do it anyway.
It's in that Elite Beat Agents, extremely unlikely, yet it could actually still happen, to everyone's surprise.
There may well be a paucity of things to come out on Wii this year, as we've said many times, so maybe it could fit it out. But yeah, you gotta think a WarioWare game is gonna be a big thing for, you know, 3DS or Wii U, or, you know, it's the kind of thing.
In fact, if somebody predicts that, I'm just gonna yell at them and say that is not a valid prediction.
No, you gotta think it's gonna happen. But of course, that doesn't have to be by Sakamoto. research group because intelligent systems have dipped their toes into the WarioWare thing before when they've needed someone to sort of crank one out. I think it was Touched, wasn't it, that they did?
Yeah, but Touched is also the weak link.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, that doesn't mean they couldn't make a good one. They're a good developer.
Well, the weak link is the photo one that they did for DSiWare.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
that's the really weak link. But I think
that doesn't even count.
They
learned
their lesson,
like...
I hope, from that. It was kind of universally trashed. Okay, so, Greg, your next prediction, please.
All right, well, I'm going to say that Pikmin is going to be a launch window title for Wii U. Now, it may or may not quite make it into this calendar year as a launch window title, because I'm thinking the Wii U is going to come out pretty late, you know, November.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be, you know, in the first few months, mm-hmm. because it's just a staple of console launches that you have games that were basically for the previous console that got upported or whatever you want to say. I mean, you know, obviously with the N64 to GameCube, there was quite a lot of that. Eternal Darkness, mm-hmm. Star Fox Adventures. You know, this is the sort of thing that's pretty much you would always expect to see. And Pikmin is one case where we really do know about it. So I think it's not going to be some big plank of the launch or anything like that. You know, it's going to be a complimentary game, but I definitely see it coming out within a few months of the system.
It'll be the Wave Race 64 of the early days of Wii U.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be a secondary game, but it'll be much beloved by a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, and I think there's great potential, you know, with the way that they use the tablet controller and all that for kind of, you know, telling your Pikmin what to do and whatnot, but sort of going to a theme that James was talking about. Online co-op is something that's always seemed like Pikmin would be very well suited to.
Yeah.
So if they really were getting serious to the point of having online co-op in the Mario game.
You see, this sort of steals the thunder from what my follow-up prediction was going to be, because I didn't realize we were going to go round robin. My follow-up was all of Nintendo's non-single-player first-party games, at least for a while, will have some form of online content, because they will feel like we need to show this is how we do it here. Because at this point, they have to recognize that not having online is killing them on the Wii. Or not having effective online.
So even, let's say there's some kind of Wii Sports follow-up.
See, that was another... Damn it, all my predictions are coming out of order.
Yeah, I mean, well, that would seem to be a very high probability, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I had more specific on that one. But that might be the exception where they just say, well, it's a pack-in, so we don't necessarily need to
do
that.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
I can see that.
It's always going to be a certain amount where online doesn't generally seem to be that important to people in Japan, and, you know, they're very Japan-centric and all that. So I don't see it being applied across the board. And certainly something like a Wii Sports compendium of games, but, you know, for the tablet controller, that's all about local multiplayer. So right. I wouldn't expect to see it in that case, even if it could hypothetically, you know, be a lot of fun and improve the experience. I think Pikmin's got a borderline, because there's definitely, you know, something really incredible that could happen there, you know, because you had the two characters in Pikmin 2, Olimar and Louie, that you switch between yourself, but you imagine doing that, you know, truly simultaneously with another person.
Well, and Pikmin 2 has a two-player mode, but it's really underutilized. I mean, very, you know, not played nearly enough for how much effort they probably put into it. So
right.
I think this is a chance for them to say, you know, if we're going to spend a lot of effort to make a really great two-player mode, let's make it online so people can actually play it.
Yeah, and I mean, as I've said before, with Pikmin, it's important that I really think it's ill-suited to split screen.
Yeah.
So even in high definition, it would be ill-suited to split screen. So with Wii U, we've got a couple of ways. For instance, you could have someone working exclusively on the tablet and someone working exclusively on the TV screen. That is a possibility. But then you've got online. Now, the difference here is that in Mario's case, what James is talking about is that, well, the game is already designed. So what right. are you going to add to it? And then, you know, online comes into play. With Pikmin, it may, even though suppose it's been kicking around for a while on the previous system and goodness knows what's gone into it already, you still feel like Nintendo being Nintendo, their priorities being what they are, they will prioritize designing the game itself first. And then online would be something that would be kind of like a bonus if they could pull it off. And if they're looking at it as a launch window game, that could easily not happen.
Yeah, like with Star Fox. He could just say, we didn't have time.
Yeah, exactly. Starfleet, that's a good example of where it seemingly wouldn't have been difficult at all to do it, but they still just said, nah, not, you know.
Yeah. In the case of New Super Mario Brothers, like, I feel like that game might already be on a shelf somewhere at this point. Like, it might literally already be done.
Maybe it's more ambitious than you're giving it credit for, though.
Well, we don't know, but I mean, my point is I am relatively confident about Pikmin being a launch window title, but not nearly so confident about it having online, but it would be really exciting if it did.
Yeah. Who went last? I'm confused.
Greg did.
Yeah, technically I did, but James came
it
in.
It was a while ago. So, John, what's your next prediction?
My next prediction is it will be revealed for Wii U that Square Enix will be releasing Final Fantasy XIV on the platform.
The online Final Fantasy XIV.
No, that game is dead. That game is dead.
No, it's not dead.
Have they charged any money for it yet?
Yeah, they are. They're actually starting it very soon, like
a
in the next couple
later.
Of weeks.
A year later, they're going to collect
their
first subscription.
Well, listen to my
check.
Reasoning. That's why, because it's been such a cash sink for them that they're going to want to spread it across as many platforms as they possibly can. And because it's already on PC, theoretically, since I believe they're using an ATI card graphics-wise in Wii U, should be able to bring it across fairly easily, I would think, to port it. And since it seems that the Wii U is going to have a more open online architecture, much like the PS3, which they're also making it for, obviously, that they're going to bring it across and throw it on Wii U.
Well, I know they've completely rebooted the game, like added tons of major, major stuff to it that wasn't in the original version.
Yeah, like playability.
It's like almost a different game now than when it launched, because they fired all the developers who worked on the original launch version and hired a completely new team to work on it.
I think that's kind of overblown. I mean, they replaced the producer and some of the stuff like that. But mainly what they did is they went about adding stuff that really should have been there right from the start.
Yeah.
I don't think they had like an auction house, which is completely ridiculous in an MMO if you don't have an auction house.
There were no chocobo. Well, especially since auction house is part of Final Fantasy going back before MMOs existed. But
yeah.
But also, I mean, I think didn't they add chocobos and airships and stuff like that?
Now, chocobos were in there from the beginning because in the Japanese version, they got the name wrong for their own bird. They were called horse birds.
Yeah. But, you know, now that they've kind of gotten through that first rocky phase, well, it's still in that rocky phase, I guess, but through that first kind of, like you said, Johnny, like that sort of redesign thing, like that's the whole thing that pushed back the PS3 release, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's because they had to go back and, you know, make all those design changes, and they were obviously focusing on that rather than doing the PS3 work, continuing the PS3 work, because it's been in the background the whole time. But
how would this connect to Dragon Quest X being on Wii U? Is this testing the waters in some way?
I don't know, because I mean, they're fairly different. I don't believe that Dragon Quest X is going to be as wide open.
It's not really an MMO.
Yeah. No, it's not. But I mean, yeah. I'm saying, you know, in some ways you might think you'd be more likely to put something like FF14 on Wii U after something like Dragon Quest X, which is not a whole the way an MMO. Hmm. If that's sort of successful, maybe then you say, maybe we can take the next step, you know, if the online infrastructure and all that kind of stuff proves itself. I could see it more. Dragon Quest X seems like it's going to be a kind of project to try and get people, you know, really interested in going online with their console in a way that just seemingly has not happened yet with this powerful brand that's so mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, you could be looking at it also from the other way around, and like in terms of doing all that network coding and everything, they're going to get that heavy lifting out of the way. Hmm. So by the time Dragon Quest X comes around, it'll be a piece of cake.
Well, there's no doubt Dragon Quest X is not going to be a launch title for Wii U. It's probably not even going to be close. So I like your idea, John. For one, it's exciting and surprising, but also I think you make an argument, because it does make sense that, you know, because FF14 already exists and they've been working on it very actively, and they've had a long de facto beta test period with the PC version, and they're already making the console version for PS3. And I think it makes sense. I don't know if I believe it, but I think you've made a rational argument for it for sure.
Yeah. Well, they got to get more money out of it somehow. And
yeah,
the
true.
Wii U is supposedly going to be an open platform.
And it would excite people, wouldn't it? I mean, a numbered Final Fantasy game on a Nintendo platform, I think it would,
yeah.
Even though it is the online game, which a lot of people think is really probably even should not be numbered, like 11 was as well, but I think it would get a lot of attention. So James, what's your next prediction?
So we don't really know a whole lot for the 3DS beyond that kind of window we've got right now where there's like, what, three or four games that we still know are coming?
Kid Icarus, Luigi's Mansion, Paper Mario.
Yeah, so we're kind of in a weird situation where they've got all their big franchises already in place at this point. So the question is, what can they get out quickly? And I thought about this for a while, and I said, well, they could do another port, but that's probably going to have some nasty PR at this day.
Yeah, it's way past that point.
Yeah, like if they wanted to do a port of, say, Majora's Mask, they couldn't at this point. I mean,
well, you say that, but I mean, look at the Mario Advance stuff.
They never did make an original Mario for GBA.
No, exactly,
no, but they made the craziest numbering scheme ever.
So, Sunshine 3D?
I wouldn't rule it out, but I understand what James is saying. I mean, the environment is different.
The environment is a lot more competitive now, too.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that's part of it. It's just like, I mean, the GBA was so dominated by games that were either literally remade or heavily derivative of the 16-bit era. Mm-hmm. You know, I appreciate there are differences. But at the same time, you know, I think they could hit it again, but maybe, I don't know whether they would hit it in as quick succession as they did back then.
So that leads me to my question of what game is actually coming out for this thing. And I actually believe that Nintendo isn't going to try to make a hard sell of a 3DS game until later in the year. And that instead, their plan for now until October-ish time is they're going to be much harder pushing other people's things. Which might, that doesn't sound, you know, super exciting for the Nintendo fan, but I think their goal right now will probably be more to engage with the publishers, and that we're going to see them hyping up games from other people. Like a good example would be, I expect to see them doing supplemental PR for games like Rhythm Thief.
It's the kind of thing that they're already engaged with, especially in Europe. You know, Revelations upcoming is something that they're doing the distribution on, they're doing the promotion. So, yeah, this is not virgin territory for them.
No, because the problem is, as far as I see it, is I don't see that they can release anything until October because they don't have a chance to announce it.
Well, they've got Luigi's Mansion and Animal. I mean, I don't think Animal Crossing.
Well, no, I'm saying besides those ones that we know are coming already.
I think three first party games is plenty to tide them over until October. I think they will stretch those out as far as they can.
That's a long time to stretch out three games.
I agree, but they'll do it. Those games are not all coming out in April, I'll tell you right now.
Well, no, but that goes to the point of I think they're going to bring third-party games in as their big PR push.
No, I mean, Kid Icarus is the only one that's going to make it for Q1. And then after that, you've still got Luigi's Mansion, you've still got Paper Mario, and you've still got Animal Crossing. But there will be smaller games that will get announced and released relatively quickly. I mean, I think that's inevitable.
And they've been doing a lot of that on their download space, which is kind of an idea that I've got coming for my next route around. So.
Okay. So my next prediction is that Wii U will get a facelift at E3. Now, we have some idea that that is going to happen anyway, but I think it'll get a fairly significant facelift. I think it will end up looking quite a bit different than the Wii. And maybe a new name too. We discussed that earlier, but I think it's certainly necessary. I also think there's some probability that it might actually happen. And finally, I think when the Wii U launches towards the end of 2012, it will cost $300, but it will include a game.
I agree with that. Yeah, that's exactly what I had. It's to $299 with some sort of pack-in compendium of tablet controller-specific games.
And I guess you can make an argument that maybe that game will be Mario because it seems kind of easy to do and it has a wide appeal, but quite frankly, they'd be stupid to pack in Mario because that is leaving money on the table.
But they've already shown a Wii Sports tech demo in the preview video. I mean, that game already exists.
Yeah, you've got the way they were showing like pitching with baseball. You know,
That game is already there. It just wasn't at E3.
But there's a real question of, can they just do Wii Sports again? Like, does that work a second time? I'm not sure that it does.
I think this pack-in needs to be broader than Wii Sports, but done with the tablet. But
Carnival Games 3?
That already exists, John.
No, I mean, I think it can be, though. I mean, you've already got the Wii Sports template there, so you can do some of those games again, but now, you know, in a different way because of the tablet controller. But I think the fact that you are kind of riffing on established templates means it's perfectly plausible that the pack-in could have other facets to it, you know, games that are not in the sports category, because it's just going to be about showing off really what the controller can do and, you know, giving something for everyone that buys a Wii U, presumably at Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever, a reason to get the family around, let's all play it and try out all this different stuff.
Right. All you have to think is Nintendo going to be able to sell this stuff as a separate disc? I don't really think so. I mean, they didn't even really sell Wii Play as a separate disc. They sold it as a pack-in with a controller.
Well, see, that's actually where I was going to think about it, because I was thinking Wii Play Plus style, where they basically hand over developers and say, make us a game for this package.
Well, I'm sure that, I mean, at least within Nintendo, I think they might these component parts might come from disparate teams. You know, maybe you know, there was a E3, there was a very clearly sort of a Rhythm Heaven-ish kind of minigame with the pirates. Theme.
That was really fun. I mean, you look like an asshole, but that was fun.
They could have some of those games from Sakamoto's group come in, but then also from the Wii Sports Resort guys. And I mean, you know, I'm sure he'll be drawing from all of Nintendo's creative people, because it's a huge thing. I mean, for all the great games or the hugely successful games that have been on the Wii, you still have to question how possible it would have been without that initial impact of Wii Sports. So, I mean, they're going to look to try and recreate that in some way, which it'd be interesting. I mean, I think it's absolute shoo-in that you get the pack-in in America. Of course, in Japan, they sold Wii Sports separately and did rather well. But and I'm sure they have no qualms. But you wonder whether they might harmonize the approach or continue it doing it differently for different regions.
I don't know, but I do know that we have been around twice now, and this feature's already getting a little long in the tooth, so it's time for the lightning round, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, no, I don't like that.
All right, James, what about you?
Don't like lightning. See, I think this is really the year the eShop's going to go well, because I think we're going to see the first, and I really believe this based on having listened to Kohler describe his interview with Miyamoto, we're going to have the first Miyamoto-designed small game released on the not small, because they don't make, quote, small games, but... but lower level of development resource game on the eShop. That'll be his first game he's truly the anchor of in, what, 10 years?
Yeah.
And I think we'll see on the eShop more access tool things. And I think that will bleed over into Wii U, where we will see lots of tablet things that can run while the Wii U is in hibernation mode, kind of like the Wii's in hibernation mode, but doing nothing of value whatsoever.
Okay, my next one, 3DS at some point in 2012 will experience a minor fitness craze. Maybe not a first-party driven thing, but if you look at Just Dance and all the crazy exercise shit on Kinect and on Wii, I think the 3DS has the technical capability to do some stuff like this, especially with the pedometer app. And I think if you go back and look at Personal Trainer Walking for DS, a really kind of misguided release from Nintendo and not very useful, but I think with 3DS, you can actually take another crack at that and do it properly this time. I'm not sure if it will be kind of take it around with you all the time, or if it'll be more like do these motions in your home while holding the 3DS or keeping it in your pocket or whatever. But I think there'll be some kind of push towards this. It may not be a really big deal, but I think there'll be some kind of minor craze involving some kind of fitness thing. I'm surprised it hasn't happened already, actually. I think it'll happen this year. Okay, Greg, do you have anything else?
Well, I do think at E3 this year we will get a somewhat bullshitty Smash Brothers teaser video that will betray the fact that they've barely just started working on the game.
That they haven't even hired the developers
but,
yet.
Yeah, but they've got Wario doing a nuclear fart, so, you know, it's fine. Yeah. But, I mean, you might hear something maybe at a roundtable about how conceptually they're looking at the 3DS and the Wii U interacting for those two versions. Perhaps as an example of how they see the platforms interacting in general, but you know, other than that, you're not going to get anything concrete on the game.
Well, I'll do you one better. I think part of the reason Kid Icarus has taken so long to come out and been delayed so much is because Sakurai left that project quite a while ago. I think Sakurai has been working on Smash Brothers since about E3, and I think Kid Icarus has been kind of flailing without him.
I don't know. I mean, that game always looked like it had issues.
Well, I agree, but I think at some point Sakurai said, "Fuck this. It's not going to work whether I'm here or not, so I'm going to move on to the game that I actually want to make."
If he wanted to make more Smash Brothers, wouldn't he still be at Nintendo?
No, because they'd have him making Kirby. John, what, do you have anything else?
Yeah, since it's already on PS3, I think you're going to see Steam announced for Wii U.
Oh, snap! But will you be able to buy games through it?
I don't know. I think...
It'd be really interesting if they used that as a distribution route for, like, Batman, for instance.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you don't know. I mean, they could very well go the route of maybe having Wii U ports of PC games.
Right. Because it will, and even all these console games that came out in 2011 that they've already announced for it, because does it make sense to release Batman on a disc for Wii U at the end of 2012? Maybe not, but does it make sense to release it as a $30 download through Steam? Maybe so.
Well, see, here's the thing. How does Nintendo get their skin?
Oh, they'll take a little off the top.
Because right now, Steam goes through Valve.
But what if you have to buy your Steam games with Wii U points?
I would shoot myself.
Well, they've gone to the cash shop for eShop. They ain't going to go backwards on that.
I would go on a violent rampage through the E3 show floor.
But look, any game that is licensed to play on Nintendo's platform, Nintendo will get a cut of, whether it's sold through Steam or not. So they'll have to negotiate something with Valve in order to make that happen. But trust me, you're not going to be buying games for Wii U that Nintendo doesn't make money on. That's never going to happen. That's Nintendo invented that model back in the 80s. So, well, I've got a couple more here just to wrap up. I think Xenoblade will bomb in North America. Maybe that's conservative. And I think Last Story is hopeless for a North American release. If you want Last Story, you will have to import it. I think because Xenoblade will bomb, you can forget about Last Story.
It will bomb, and this will never be able to prove this. I think it almost deliberately was bombed. I think this was a face-saving release, and they really never intended for it to do well.
The people who still haven't played it and want to play it in English will have a way to do so, and so it will please them. And whether it makes a ton of money for Nintendo or not, they're probably past the point of caring.
Yeah.
They're trying to save face, and they sort of will. And then finally, I think E3 will be dominated by 3DS games. I don't know if you guys remember back in E3 2005, but it was the E3 after DS came out, and it was just smothered in third-party DS games, and first-party DS games for that matter. And I think this year is going to be very much the same, because Wii U will still be, you know, it's going to have launchitis, so there's not going to be anything like... Yeah. There will be Wii U games around, but they'll mostly be in Nintendo's booth, and, you know, there's not going to be a ton of third-party stuff that you've never heard of before. And the other, you know, Microsoft and Sony are not going to have new consoles in any kind of shape to be showing a lot of games for them. And I think people are very iffy on Vita right now, especially from a third-party standpoint because of the piracy history and stuff like that. So I think 3DS is really going to be huge at E3 this year. And there'll be some really interesting third-party stuff. They'll be, like, tucked away, you know, like games you've never heard of. And Nintendo's not showing them off, but, like, you go to some booth tour with Konami or, you know, whoever, and you're like, oh, crap, what is this? This is awesome. So I think this is the year where that stuff is going to start to happen.
Although it would require Western third parties becoming significantly more enthusiastic. I think there'd have to be a sort of step change. So far, the Japanese publishers have been...
They are all over it at this point.
Yeah, they're all in, and with good reason when you look at its commercial performance in Japan. But third party...
It's been doing really well in America, too.
Oh, yeah.
But we haven't seen it yet. They've got to... You know, that would be the time for a lot of these people who seem to have been on the fence to really get in.
Right.
Yeah, let's put the really, really well in perspective. It sold 4 million units in the US, which is good. It sold 4 million units in Japan with a third of the population, which is really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, and finally, we're going to go around and give our most anticipated games.
I have one more I wanted to give, if that's okay.
Okay.
And this goes kind of where you were going. I think this is the year where we see the first games that really use AR well, like full retail games that make good use of AR. And I think
you're optimistic.
No, I think it's going to be led by a single game, which is the really terrible and terrible name Bravely Default, because they actually are putting a lot of effort.
No, that's not its full name. Bravely Default Flying Fairy. Don't forget to give it a truly...
Ooh, it's even better / worse.
Yeah, exactly. You got to give
it
its full...
It is a phenomenally awful name. But I saw the trailer they released from the Nintendo Direct event, and A, it's going to use the AR stuff a lot, apparently. And B, it looks amazing.
It looks awesome. Yeah. It does.
Like, that game might end up being one of those games that really sort of, like, a fate changer for the system, where people... Not people steal things from it. Not like it alters the whole system performance, but, like, people see it, oh, you can do AR this way. Maybe we can integrate that into our games.
Yeah, like a Feel the Magic kind of trailblazer.
Well, yeah, but let's not compare it to that game. That's
well, I think AR is the microphone of 3DS. I think it's there might be one or two games that use it in interesting ways, but for the most part, it's just going to be abysmal.
I mean, I'm not thinking every game is going to use it, but I'm thinking we might see three or four more games come out that really make solid use of it, which would be more than I would have expected a year ago.
Yeah, maybe with like a Fatal Frame type of thing, maybe, but...
No, the Shinrai camera.
So let's go around and mention our single most anticipated game of the year. And this year, we don't really have a Zelda or Mario anticipated for the end of the year, so we don't really have to worry about that. But so just be some interesting choices here. Greg, what is yours?
Yeah, well, I mean, I am really looking forward to Revelations in a few weeks. That's a bit obvious, and it's really, you know, imminent as well. Mm-hmm. And to a lesser extent, Luigi's Mansion. I mean, obviously, I've been looking forward to that, relating back to my prediction from last year.
That I almost think, made my pick, actually.
I think Next Level could do a good job, but I've got a couple of really sort of, well, one super obscure choice that I'm getting in just for how obscure it is. So in Japan, there's a 3DS game in the works, with the probably the most egregious blank of blank title ever,
which
is Code of Princess.
Yes.
So this is basically a Guardian Hero style brawler.
Is it related to Princess Crown?
No, because apparently the developers are in some way connected to the original Guardian Heroes, but made by Treasure for the Saturn. Huh. So I'm not sure if they're people that left Treasure or what the deal is, but there's a connection there with the developers, and the character art is done by someone that worked on 999. And there's some pretty outlandish designs.
Oh, yeah.
Code of Princess.
It's such a terrible name.
That's
but,
awesome.
But, you know, I've never played Guardian Heroes, given that it seems to be like everything else, Treasure downloadable, exclusive to 360. I'm not sure I ever will. So, you know, this could, if it against all odds got localized with presumably a better name, I would really like to play it, because it seems like, you know, if you put those sort of multiple layers on the 3DS and all of the kind of high quality sprite work and all that, I think it would look great. I mean, I'm not a huge brawler guy, but you know, it sounds like Guardian Heroes kind of takes it in more of an interesting direction than I'd like to try, and so presumably this might as well. So
technical.
Yeah, if you want something obscure, I just gave it to you. And also, maybe from Japan, I would quite like to see the third Rocket Slime game come over, because I never played the DS one. I didn't get around to it.
Right.
Sounds like it's pretty much more of the same, but that's not really a problem for me.
Yeah.
So that's a somewhat more likely pick to come over from Japan for this year.
Cool. All right, John, what about you?
Mine's easy, since I don't have a 3DS, so that would have to be Xenoblade Chronicles, which I already have pre-ordered.
Cool. Ah, you're going to be one of the few to pick up the American version. That's cool, man.
Yeah, that would be my game if I didn't already own it.
Well, between John and I, you're going to be hearing about plenty more Xenoblade in 2012. Don't worry.
I'm pretty close to replay point, so.
All right, James, so what about you?
So, the last story, obviously, although I'm almost certainly going to have to import it, so that gets the awesome respect of being carried over.
Mm-hmm.
Good People Die, if that comes out.
Wait.
Yeah, that's the 999 sequel type of thing, right?
And it looks really cool. I really enjoyed 999, and I suspect this one is even more sci-fi than that one.
A very ominous title, too.
Well, I mean, considering the first game really should be called Bad People Die, so I guess this one... That's not a spoiler, because you don't know who's bad, but that's basically the game. Bad people die, so it makes sense this one's called Good People Die.
I look forward to Inara 2's film adaptation.
Also, the Leighton Wright game.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if you didn't mention that.
Yeah, and the Time Something game.
Time Travelers, the level 5 game. Yeah.
Yeah, like that. I don't know anything about that game, but it looks cool. So I've got three 3DS games that I'm interested in. It's kind of weird. And obviously, I can't cheat and say the Wii U, since I did 3DS last year. But I am looking forward to it, but I'm not going to make it my game.
All right, cool. Well, that just leaves me, and I'm going to go with my most anticipated game of the year, Pikmin 3. And it's not that I'm the world's biggest fan of Pikmin or Pikmin 2, but I feel like it's been such a long time since either one of those games came out. I think there's a very wonderful, magical style about Pikmin that is so charming, and it really sets it apart from any other game Nintendo or anyone else makes. And so I'm ready to go back into that world. For sure. I'm more than ready. I'm really excited to go back into that world of Pikmin. I'm also really excited to see what they do with it after such a long hiatus. Yeah, I feel like because they've been working on this for so long, it's been, you know, crossed multiple platforms now, and it's going to be on a brand new system with a totally new interface and everything. I feel like they have a chance to really kind of rethink this series and how this series is played, and I think it's very exciting. And then, you know, with the predictions you guys laid out of it being online, I think that would be wonderful. So I'm all about Pikmin 3. I'm actually kind of, the more I think about it, the more I am looking forward to it. I think it'll be my first big Wii U title, like the first one that I'm really into, you know, after the probably disappointing crop of launch titles. So hopefully it comes out this year. We'll see. But that's going to wrap it up, everybody. I hope you enjoyed our predictions. Let us know what you think, because we will get back to email very soon, maybe next week. The address for that is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, or you can go to the show notes for this episode over at nintendoworldreport.com and click the link there to send us an email that way. And, of course, want to remind you once again that Retroactive poll is ongoing. The voting will close not too long after this episode launches, so be sure to go over there immediately while it's still on your mind if you have not voted yet. It's been a tight race, and there's been good participation, but there are lots more votes sitting out there waiting to be cast. So please, please, please join the process. I think it's going to be a lot of fun here, and we want to have really cool participation. So again, if you are a 3DS ambassador, you already have all three of these games. You have no reason not to vote for one of them and then participate in the feature. We will be kicking that off soon, so listen next week for the announcement of the winner. Finally, just wanted to get in a couple of plugs here. Connectivity has just celebrated its 15th or 16th episode, I think. They're really rolling along, a lot of really interesting features week to week over there, and you can hear a wide variety of voices from across the NWR staff, including that almost every week of one of the founders of this podcast, Mike Sklens. So you can go over and check in with him as well. And then just wanted to mention, we've had some really fun episodes lately of Box Office Poison. That's the movie podcast done by all the old school hosts of RFN. So you've got Carl and Stan and myself and Mike, and then our friend John Rind as well. And we're having a really good time over there. We're about to discuss a British movie. I don't know if you're familiar with it, Greg. It was called With Nail and I. And
I've seen it, yes.
None of us have ever seen it, so it's going to be kind of interesting to get together and discuss that. And then, of course, we're going to be doing our top movies of 2011 list coming up very soon as well. And then my other show that I produce and edit and host is called Discover Music Project. We just did a really fun episode on Weird Al Yankovic, and I bet a lot of listeners of this show would really enjoy Weird Al's music. If you don't already listen to his stuff, it's all original songs of his, not parody songs. So it's a really interesting idea for an episode. It was a listener request. So I would encourage you to check those out. You can search for them on iTunes or just go over to crosstalk.com. That is Crosstalk with a W instead of an L. And have fun. Let us know what you think of those. So that's all, folks. Come back next week. We'll have more Radio Free Nintendo for you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Later.
So just as a quick question, does the city turn to sand at the end of the game?
It falls into the sand.
Of course it does!
But that's what's interesting, too.
It's basically the DuckTales movie.
So do the writers of these games just go watch every Indiana Jones film before the writing session? Go, okay, guys.
Yeah, it's never been bashful about that.
I've never actually tried to guess the endings of these games, and I'm horrified that I'm actually doing it.
Look, trust me, it's Indiana Jones film Uncharted, but it's the villain is going to get what he wanted all along, but he's going to get a bit too much of it, if you know what I mean. He's going to get his comeuppance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem I have with that is I feel like they really, like, throughout the series, they tried to kind of carry characters across from one game to the next, like Soap and McTavish, and these I think that's the same
soap
guy.
Soap is McTavish.
Yeah, Soap is McTavish. Price. It's like Soap and Price and a couple of other guys that they try to carry through the games. But then at the end, they never really like kind of wrap up like what happened to them. The game just ends, right?
You want the bit at the end of America's Game where they explain what happened to all those people you just saw won the Super Bowl. Except in this case, they didn't complete a touchdown pass. They shot some guy through the face.